is Southside.
When we're looking back at highlights of 2010 in many of our expert categories from the point of view of lifestyle, health, rural activities and so on, one name shines above all others as a true wonderful person who will hopefully be joining us in the studio in the not too distant future from, of course, Wilkin Chapman Grange Solicitors, the largest law firm in Lincolnshire and East Yorkshire. We're delighted to be able to actually welcome the fantastic Claire Parker once again. How are you, Claire?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex. And you?
Wonderful. Very good indeed. It's nice to see that we've sorted out the snow factors, so hopefully it won't be too long before you'll be joining us in one of our studios, probably in the Lincoln one at Siren 107.3 FM.
So. I'm looking forward to it.
Excellent. Now, we've got four interesting areas we're going to look at today, and they all possibly can be dealt under the umbrella of caveat emptor, buyer beware, to a certain extent. But the first of these is misrepresentation with respect to iPads, phones, various other technology things, where items are actually sent to people. It's obviously purchased via the internet, the web, mail order, deliver, etc. And they're actually not as originally described. What's the kind of right of consumer recourse in such issues?
Well, there is, of course, as you've already used the word, misrepresentation. And if a contract, if there's a problem with misrepresentation in a contract, then, of course, you've got a claim in respect of that. What's often a problem is when people are sort of told something by some salesman who's perhaps a bit glib, etc., on the telephone or in person whatsoever. Be very careful what you sign is what I would say, because we often see this, they're told something, but then sign some terms and conditions and they're deemed to have read them. And that's often a problem that we come across. So be careful of what's told, is said to you, and get it put in writing, basically. Other things to think about is if someone's cold calling you, so if you haven't actually asked for something, they've come to you first, there's sort of distance selling regulations and things like that, you've got a cooling off period. But the answer is be very careful what you sign.
Yes, always. It's often one of those most obvious things, but nevertheless a crucial factor from that point of view. Mm. Let's move on from this. I mean, another interesting line that came across was the case of where, in the case of livestock, a kitten is actually sent from the point of view of being certified to being of particular quality of breed. That proves not to be the case. Is there a right of redress against the original seller?
Well, there certainly would be, because that would be a classic misrepresentation if they've been told that they're buying certain something that it didn't transpire to be. But, of course, the classic situation of the cat dying doesn't mean to say that you can get your money back from the breeder, because, of course, it could be for any number of factors. You're entitled to get what you've asked for and what you've been told you're getting.
Mm, excellent. Now, one of the other areas that we've often talked about, which people still seem to be a little bit unclear about the efficacy of how this can be used, are the role of McKenzie Friends and the ways in which British legal justice actually allows for a system in which, if for reasons of stress or reasons of concern or whatever the reasons, people can, in certain civil instances, actually have a duly deputised McKenzie Friend who can actually speak on their behalf in legal cases. Is that roughly the case of what a McKenzie Friend is?
That's right, and we're seeing this more and more often now, because with the lack of legal aid that there is now around, more and more people are in the very difficult situation where they can't afford legal representation, but equally are struggling to deal with some things themselves. So McKenzie Friend is certainly something that I'm coming across a lot more in court, and I'm sure the local judges are. The court has to accept somebody as a McKenzie Friend, and the other side in the transaction are given the right to make comments, because sometimes people aren't appropriate that are chosen. It might be a close member of the family who's causing problems or whatever it may be. But yes, in the vast majority of cases I've been involved with, the court's accepted a McKenzie Friend, and it can be quite successful.
And again, just from the point of view of that stress factor, because human beings being what we are, strange, complex beings, sometimes if one's put in a situation where it is clearly a stressful thing, it needs that, dare I say it from the point of view of the academic world, where I actually represent students as an academic advocate. Mm. And you will effectively be there to really verbalise the person's concerns, in this particular case the student, in the case of obviously the McKenzie Friends, the person who's actually sort of doing the court scenario about the sort of issues they're concerned about. So, I mean, it would seem, as you rightly say, one way in which things can be addressed. Does the court have the right to almost at a will just decide to choose to accept or not to accept, or to actually change dates of trials arbitrarily? I mean, is that a sort of standard way that they can actually operate?
No. A judge would always want to hear both sides. So the classic situation where somebody writes in and the other side's not told about it, or something like that, and I know you've had quite a few questions about that sort of area, it doesn't happen that way. People have to be told and consulted. And you can ask the judge to hear on that point as to whether it should be adjourned or what should happen. But always, both sides have to be told about the adjournment, of course.
Yes.
And the new date, that's only got to be fair.
Yeah, I would have thought so, because I know there was one instance where a date was actually set with literally 2 days' notice, and I thought that's a bit unusual, that, in various ways, really, that things are sorted through. So a key point from there. Moving on from that to, again, something else that we keep returning back to, and this is the question of leaseholds and freeholds and what's being used from that perspective. Again, we've talked about, in an ideal world, obviously people would have freehold and we'd be sorted through for that. That's not the case. We live in a world where sometimes leases are taken out, etc. In terms of rights that the leaseholders actually have for the freeholders, for part business use and various other bits and pieces, are there any clear guidelines that are set, that are laid down, that people can actually go to and actually say, in fact, you know, you never asked for permission to actually set up this particular activity in this particular place, therefore you're in breach of the actual original lease, and therefore you must go or pay or whatever?
Well, the lease is the key document here, and you have to look carefully at that. If a lease says you can't use it for anything other than just living accommodation, and you do anything other than that, you're in breach of the lease. And in an extreme case, the landlord could ask that lease is brought to an end. Negotiation is probably the way forward in those circumstances. But also remember that it is possible to look at getting rid of the lease. You know, for example, if it's just a house, and we have quite a lot of these in this county, which is quite strange, where we have a lease that is actually a lease of a house. And that person can there ask to buy the freehold, and the set ways of serving notices and getting valuations to do that. The landlord can't think of a figure and double it. It's dealt with by proper formulas set down. And also if it's a block of flats, and if a certain number of the leaseholders get together and decide they want to buy the block of flats, then that's something else that they can do as well. And then, of course, they can set their own rules as to what people can and can't do in them.
Indeed. The thing I always like about you, Claire, is you kind of adhere very solidly to not only providing with us with sage, wonderful, workable advice, but you also sort of acknowledge that ultimately there's very little that can't be really sorted amicably if people are actually willing to sit down and actually talk about the whole thing. And that's crucial.
That's right. Court, although we do it day in, day out, doubt as solicitors, is the last resort, quite frankly. You don't want to be going there. You want to get things sorted out if you can. And there's lots of schemes out there as well, of sort of mediation schemes, where these things can be discussed and hopefully resolved.
Indeed. We've talked about, obviously, misrepresentation of goods. To a certain extent, it's the same thing with respect to livestock in terms of breeds of kittens and various other things. If we go on to other areas relating to the mobile phone companies and so on, are we getting to the stage now where if a company's kind of agreed that they are actually at fault and that they have, for instance, overcharged or provided the wrong service, and they do actually acknowledge that, and then nothing actually happens as 6 months go by and a year goes by and 2 years go by and so on, and still, despite kind of being questioned from the consumer's perspective in terms of is there anything developing with this, and the company effectively chooses to ignore the setup, is there any right of redress from the point of view of the consumer in that instance?
Well, there is, yes. I'd always advise looking at the complaints department of these various companies to start with, if they're not getting anywhere, and I've always had very good results with that. And that goes with banks, it goes with a whole range of people that we deal with as consumers. If all else fails and there's been a breach of a contract and money is owed, then of course it's possible to take small claims court proceedings if the consumer's happy to do that.
Mm. because recently we had an instance where we were made aware of a case where an individual had effectively authorised an individual to another soul to actually talk on behalf of their work with the bank. The bank had actually denied this, and then actually recently have said no, they did actually have permission, but that permission had actually expired, and another letter giving permission had to be sent for another year-long basis. I mean, that does seem to be a little bit a case of again, those wonderful people, the financial organisations, the banks kind of coming up to a notion of thinking, well, you know, they either had or they hadn't, or perhaps their filing systems aren't quite up to scratch.
Sounds quite bizarre, doesn't it, really, that either someone, as you say, got permission or they haven't, and why it would expire after a year is another matter. But having said that, it wouldn't be difficult for them to ask for that permission again, would it?
Precisely.
It seems like that one should be resolved easily enough.
I wasn't sure whether indeed there was such a thing as an expiration date on sort of how long you've actually got permission, or maybe you could actually say, no, it's only, you've only got permission to speak on my behalf for 2.5 weeks or 3 months. After that, we sort it through. But that's another line entirely, I'm sure. A reminder that the web address, if you'd like to have more direct information, in fact, is Wilkin Chapman Grange. It's wilkinchapman.co.uk, in fact, to be precise. I think that's www.wilkinchapman.co.uk. That'll actually be on the website when you'll be listening to this podcast. Of course, you can listen to other Claire Parker podcasts as well, as often as you wish, basically. And I'm sure, Claire, there are people who will actually have 24/7 Claire Parker advice going through the system.
It's
seven lines. So we've got two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us here at Siren FM and Southside Broadcasting today?
As ever, thank you very much, yes.
So I take it then we can look forward to hopefully welcoming you into the studio, probably back into February, and we'll speak again about life, the universe and various other bits and pieces as well.
I shall look forward to that, Alex.